After much deliberation, the female approaches one of the males. He snatches a twig from the ground and offers it to her. They touch beaks. A choice has been made, and the failed suitors wander off.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Periscope Radio at MIT. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts, to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Elizabeth Finn in Cambridge, Massachusetts. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bath Robespierre's Broadsides with your favorite broad guy, Uncle Robert Norse. That's me. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Stay tuned for the updates on the bust at City Hall, eliminating the Constitution for the ne'er-do-wells, as well as a special call-in from Jennifer Hollenbach. I think I have her name properly. I probably have it wrong, but she's with the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, reporting on the new anti-homeless laws being proposed up there. Stay tuned.
Who owns the land? Who owns the land?
And that was, of course, Land by 15. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And who knows, maybe we're being rebroadcast on other stations throughout the world. That could be. I'm Robert Norris. This is, of course, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, twice weekly show where I unload my tapes into your ears, if you are so inclined. And this evening, that's exactly what I'm going to do, though I have a couple of guests. Jennifer Friedenbach, that's her name. I knew it was something like that. She's a legal advisor for the Coalition on Homelessness up in San Francisco. Works with one of the longest or oldest homeless civil rights organizations in the country and certainly in the state. One of the big three, Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. The other two are the Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness in Los Angeles and Better Outreach Support Services, or Better Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, BOSS, in Berkeley. They had another name, but they changed it. And these are the relatively large, homeless civil rights groups that, out of which spin other groups. Like you may recall, last week we had L.A. Can. Actually, it was a week and a half ago. We had L.A. Can come to town. That's Los Angeles Community Action Network. General Dogan and his two associates came up from Los Angeles to tell us about how they're attempting to police the police to make sure that they respect the Jones decision of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court that has ruled in Los Angeles that you lay your hands elsewhere. You don't harass homeless people at night if you're a police officer under the sleeping ban of Los Angeles, because that's a violation of the 8th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and, incidentally, the 17th Amendment to the California State Constitution, something I didn't know until about 2 weeks ago. Same kind of language, thou shalt be free from cruel and unusual punishment. Actually, not so biblically put, but no cruel and unusual punishments, please. Thank you. And to do what they do in Santa Cruz, which is to walk up to a homeless person, wake her up, give her a ticket for $97, saying you're sleeping illegally after 11 o'clock at night, because all sleep on all public property any time of the night after 11 until 8:30 in the morning is an illegal act in the city of Santa Cruz. Once you give that citation, and then the homeless person has to go out to the homeless service center and try to find a person to give them a letter that says, there is no shelter any time this summer, thank you very much. And then go to, wait a month, make sure they don't miss their court date because they don't have one yet. They have to go set a court date, walk into court early in the morning, go to the arraignment calendar, sit for a couple of hours, and stand up, go in, and give the judge, or in this case, the referee, Kim Baskett, a letter saying, guess what, Your Honor, although I know there's much honor in this, there's no legal place for homeless to sleep in Santa Cruz. Have you been aware of this, that that's been the case for the last 25 years, yet you are still dragging me into court every day, every night, or whenever I happen to get a ticket from the officer on whatever watch he's on? And she will then, actually, if you say that, she might get cranky with you and give you a tut-tut. But the fact of the matter is, she will then dismiss your ticket. And usually I say, make sure you dismiss referee Baskett. But since she is regularly dismissing these citations, probably because she doesn't want to be held legally liable and have to go through a necessity defense in these cases, or maybe because they've decided it just isn't worth the time and trouble, I don't think they're doing it out of compassion, folks. That just doesn't seem to me to be the reason. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe there's a hidden compassionate motive here somewhere. The tickets are dismissed, and about at least 60 of them are written every month. Probably a much smaller number show up in court because people don't bother with these things. They let them go to warrant. They get either arrested for a warrant, or the warrants go down to Southern California and destroy what little credit rating a homeless person might have in the future, helping them to remain homeless and outside without any kind of credit. Because ultimately these tickets that go to failure to appear and failure to pay can bop up to about $900, and that's with a $300 penalty assessment that's added apparently by the civil agency that's making the boku bucks off this particular racket, which the Santa Cruz Police Department, the City Council, and the courts all like to run together as a sort of a joint scam that's going on in Santa Cruz using the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. So, what happened last week was there were a number of people who were inspired by these LA activists, as well as local activists like myself, as well as the Jones decision by the U.S. Federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said, you know what? John Barisoni, our city attorney, Emily Riley, the mayor, Vice Mayor Coonerty, owner of the book, or his main worker in the bookshop Santa Cruz, son of the owner, Neil Coonerty, supervisor of the bookshop Santa Cruz. All of this is unconstitutional behavior, so bring it on. Let them ticket you. Then take the tickets to the two attorneys that are handling this situation, David Beauvais and Kate Wells. Actually, you take it to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. We write up your situation. We add you to the lawsuit. And then somewhere down the road, hopefully, well, we stop this practice because we have the courts noticing that it isn't just a theory. It's a real practice the police are doing. And perhaps, who knows, maybe you get some money back from it. I can't guarantee that. But that seems to be one of the few things that the city understands. And certainly there will be some money going to the attorneys, of course, for putting in their, you know, overpaid time on this. That's true with all attorneys, unfortunately. In my view, it's a huge amount of money. They get paid $200 or $300 an hour. And I think that's ridiculous. But apparently that's what that does tell the city, in essence, with attorneys who have volunteered their time, that if we win this case, city, you'll realize you were really, really stupid in taking this whole thing to court, not just changing the law the way Richmond did. The city of Richmond changed its law about 14 months ago after the Jones decision came down 18 months ago in April. And why not? And the answer, of course, is, well, they were relying on the opinion of their city attorney, or perhaps they're hoping that the Supreme Court or a bigger panel of the Ninth Circuit Court will overrule them. Or perhaps they're thinking, well, that fine opinion by Judge Kangaroo Kelly back in 1997, which said our law, or I should say their law, or the police department law, since that's where it originally came from in 1978, the sleeping ban law, no sleeping after 11 o'clock at night in a vehicle or in any structure, even if it's an office building that's well lit and warm, even if it's a movie theater or a restaurant, even if it's a church. All these are illegal buildings for sleeping in, by the words of the city's sleeping ordinance. So all of this is unconstitutional. And it's unconstitutional not just because you and I say, what is this? It violates the Geneva Convention, violates the UN Charter, it violates all kinds of provisions of the Constitution. It's not just because we say it. It's because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said it and made the LAPD and the LA City Council, not the City Council, they're completely out of control, but the city attorney, the police department, the police chief, all pay attention. And LA has decided we're not going to go after homeless people with this law, their sleeping ban law, which is somewhat different than ours, but covers the nighttime period, and says no sleeping in Skid Row. In fact, anywhere in Los Angeles, just as ours says no sleeping after 11 o'clock anywhere in Santa Cruz. Theirs says no sleeping at any time of the day or night. So it's more exhaustive, expansive. However, ours, which affects the nighttime hours, has the same impact on the homeless community. People who want or need to work during the day or do other things during the day that they need to do in order to survive or to maintain a normal existence are prohibited from doing so. They are refugees who are being treated like debris, or vermin, infestations. And you can actually see this or read this mentality when you go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel website. Check it out. There were two stories about the sleeping ban protest, which lasted for 6 days and six nights. Actually, 7 days and six nights. Sunday, August 12th through, I think, Saturday, August 19th, when the police came in and said, in essence, we don't care if we're violating the Constitution. They told us to do so, and we're good soldiers here. Kind of like what they're doing over in Iraq, though not as immediately deadly. And not as well-funded, either. And of course, So that's what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be playing over some of the tape of the contacts between the police and the campers who were able to do some really impressive things. I mean, this protest, which happened on August 12th, began with a march from the bookshop Santa Cruz, Coonerty's bookshop Santa Cruz, the vice mayor's bookshop Santa Cruz, because he would not talk to us week after week, month after month. In fact, now it's almost year after year on this issue. And he's a lawyer. He should be able to talk to us. He should understand the legalities of it. He's supposed to be on the overseeing the police department. He's in the public safety committee of the city council. Won't talk to us. Won't talk to the community. And in fact, he's insisting on keeping secret the city attorney's memo on what the real rationale for the city is in doing this, in maintaining a sleeping ban, when the Ninth Circuit Court has ruled so clearly that Los Angeles and then San Diego as well, which decided not because it had been ordered to do so by the court, but because it saw that it was likely to be ordered to do so if the lawsuit there went further. And Richmond did the same thing, as I mentioned before, without a lawsuit. They just said, look, it's the court said this. Let's change the camping law. Now, I've also got to give you full disclosure. I'm not aware that Fresno, which is considering an anti-camping law, or that San Francisco, and we hope to hear about that tonight from Jennifer Friedenbach, is considering any such thing either. They're proposing both these cities to criminalize their homeless populations in the teeth of the Jones decision. And that's an interesting situation. So I'm not saying that every city is acting properly or every city is acting rationally. The question is whether Santa Cruz, a progressive city, in some respects, not in its government, not in its police force, not in its merchant community, of course, not in its parks and rec department, not in its public works department, and I heard today that the Locust Street garage was being locked up and kept away from people who went in there as members of the public trying to use the bathrooms. That was one of the two or three bathrooms downtown open during the day, which the community had access to, but which the city, in its sensitivity to its own employees who don't want undesirable types of people hanging around the bathrooms, are apparently having a significant pressure on and having a great impact on that. In fact, that was the claim of the police department. The reason they closed down the City Hall sleepers protest was not because of citations they had to write every day and every night, and it was not because there were, you know, crimes being reported and documented that resulted in more citations. They wrote two citations for sleeping on August 20th, the morning of August 20th, Monday morning, and then on Saturday morning they wrote four more, I believe. And that was it. And what were the citations for crapping on the floor? No. Were the citations for vandalism? Uh-uh. Were the citations for sexual harassment of a city employee? No. All these claims made by that spinmeister, who I've heard some people call a lying spinmeister, Zach Friend, were not the basis for any citations. No. The only basis for citations was the sleeping ban, which in a way it's interesting because it means that the entire destruction of a protest, the destruction of the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances, was destroyed by the city police, seemingly with the advice and consent of the mayor, because the mayor's office is right there, and the vice mayor, because his office is there, and his city work job at the bookshop Santa Cruz is only two blocks away. It was destroyed without any crime happening there whatsoever. This was an attempt to destroy a public demonstration and also to destroy a safe sleeping zone, because what the city could not provide, the homeless did. Every night, 20 to 30 people slept there safely. Sometimes it got a little loud, but there weren't complaints of there were no noise complaints that were registered with anybody at the protest, or as far as I can tell yet, talking to Zach Friend, who I talked to yesterday, the police officer who gave us the tall tales, or the lurid tales, were repeated in the Santa Cruz Sentinel's stories. And I'm hoping to get more information. I filed a public records act request for hoping to get some info on that. One of these days, Zach was supposed to call back today, but he didn't do it, so hopefully he will do that tomorrow. Or the next day, or next week, or next year at some point, or perhaps he won't. Perhaps we'll just have to make it a part of the lawsuit, and we'll just subpoena him in court as a part of this whole thing in order to get the true facts as to what's going on as a central organizing person who speaks to the media. So presumably he should have the facts at his disposal. If not the facts, then certainly some rather harsh stories that cover up the really harsh performance of the police department in going after vets, women, single men with no legal place to go who are trying to seek shelter, and more at the same time to get some kind of response from the mayor as to what the heck is happening. Couldn't do it. And some say, well, they shut down the protest. That was a great victory, perhaps, for the police. And the answer is no. The answer is this was a victory for the protesters to have begun one day and then spent six nights there. I had no idea that people were going to even begin and continue I slept there for one night with them, and I thought, well, whatever they do next will be their decision. And they decided, this group, Homies for the Homeless, to continue their protest in the teeth of increasing police harassment and apparently concealed hostility from city employees who weren't candid about their problems. Instead, if Zach Friend's stories have any basis in truth, they went behind their backs to the police department. Although I kind of wonder if that's true either. I mean, I suspect the police department was looking for some basis, some excuse to use after the Sentinel turned out what really was the only good story it's done on the sleeping ban in many a moon. There's a story about a week ago on Friday by Jennifer Squires, and it was a story which actually reprinted the text of the sleeping ban, which is something that the Sentinel has never done before, at least not in the last decade. And you can read my commentary on this if you're interested at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media website. Again, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And I view the whole thing as, of course, I'm angry that the police shut this down and frightened people and dispersed them. And I note that no individuals went to jail. They didn't say, we're not going to sign the ticket. They didn't say, we're coming back to do it again in spite of this. And they did leave and went to more private hiding spots to sleep. And essentially, which left the people they were protecting in a way out in the cold, because there were, as I said, 20 to 30 people there, or 15 to 30 every night, who were, you know, able to use this as cover for a place to sleep, a well-lighted area where there was a community of people who protected them from violence, from police harassment. If they're going to be harassed, they would all be harassed together. They learned about how to deal with a police officer when a police officer approaches you and you're sleeping. At least my suggestion was, you say, am I free to go back to sleep? Because that's kind of the equivalent of saying, am I free to go? I don't want to be, it'll determine if the police officer is just making conversation or really is requiring you to talk to that person. If the cop can require you to talk, that means you can say, I don't want to talk to you. And then if they actually have a crime that they claim you're committing, then they deal with that. And if they claim you're sleeping and that's a crime, which violates the Jones decision, the federal court, the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, then let them write it up in paper and document their harassment in black and white. And that's what was done with four people on Saturday morning. And that's what will be a part of the lawsuit that will be filed probably sometime in the next few months, and maybe even sooner, because I think that they're going to be, we have now about 50, 55 plaintiffs, people who are taking, are named homeless people who have been harassed by the police. After the federal court has said, stop harassing people in Los Angeles, this is the guideline, you can't do it, it's an Eighth Amendment violation. The city attorney has been advised of it, he doesn't care, mayor doesn't care. And so we'll see if the courts care. And more important, perhaps, or as important, we'll see if the community of homeless people and the housed people who are watching this and who have to pay for all this crap, there's going to be a city attorney cost, which John Barisoni makes out like a bandit. He makes lots of money off this whole thing. He gets paid additional funding for defending the city against these lawsuits, in addition to his normal time. So it's no skin off his nose that this lawsuit goes forward. At least that's my understanding of what happens. So let's turn from my description of this, since I've been describing it for a while, and since I've done so online, you can read my description of my thought of why this is a victory. And it's not the victory I would like to see, which is hundreds of people coming to City Hall and sleeping out and the police having to let them continue sleeping. That would be a real, even more impressive victory. But it's a victory where a lot of people came out of the woodwork. A lot of people put their names to documents that will help to press this in the future. A lot of people learned that what you say is, you know, do I have a right to do, you know, are you going to be, let me go back to sleep? No, okay, then do you have a legal place for me to go? No, okay, then leave me alone. Okay, then call, I want to talk to your sergeant. And a whole series of things that can be done with respect to the police to, in essence, say to them, if you're going to waste my time, well, by God, I'm going to waste yours. Really, quite simply. If you're going to spend my time and harass me in the middle of the night, then we'll get you to go down to court and talk about this some more. If it's during the day, particularly, because that's the period of time when if a police officer stops you on the mall for a petty infraction and writes you a citation, you have a perfect right to say, officer, let's go see a magistrate. I don't think you have probable cause for this citation. And all the magistrate can do will say, yes, he does, and set a court date. But in the meantime, the cop has to spend an hour or two in court. Of course, so do you. But think of it this way. The police officer is taken off the street for 2 hours and may think twice before writing such a petty citation again. I'm talking about sitting near a building, the so-called excessive noise ordinance during the day, in which it's okay to run a motorcycle rampant up and down the street at a huge volume, but try playing a guitar or some drums before 10 o'clock at night when the noise ordinance changes and becomes more resident sensitive, but the police just decide to shut you down on the basis of any complaint, even though it has nothing to do with the volume of what you're doing, then you take that police officer and they have to pay a penalty. They have to go to court. Or the individual who signs the citation has to go to court and show probable cause. That's something else, actually, that I hadn't thought about, but it's true. If some private citizen is saying, and you'll get this from a police officer, they'll come up and say to you, you know, you're going to have to move on here. It's not that I don't want you here. It's that the private citizen doesn't want you here, and I have to follow their complaint. And you say to the officer, well, you know, two things. First, you know, I'll sign a citation, but you might want to tell the complainant that I will certainly contest it in court. And since, do you think I'm playing too loud? Well, I don't really know, or, you know, it's not my, I can't really say. You say, well, you would know because it's your job to know, and if you heard me playing too loudly, your responsibility would be to write me a citation yourself. And since you're not doing it, and you're simply acting as a goon squad for somebody else who's hiding in a building or some merchant who doesn't want to come out and talk to you person to person and say, you know, can you keep it a little more quiet, but instead wants to enforce the law and treat you like a piece of garbage, or treat me like a piece of garbage, or I'm the musician, let's say, then I would say to you, you'll be subpoenaed in court, officer, as well, because you obviously didn't think it was excessive noise, or you would have cited me independent of this whole thing. But also, I'm not going to sign this citation until I go to a magistrate. I mean, I'm not refusing to, but I want to make sure there's probable cause, because I don't think there's excessive noise here. I don't even think it's a matter of, you know, having a trial about it. I don't think you even have, there's no real basis for believing that there even might be excessive noise here. So let's have that individual who has made the complaint come to court with us before the judge and explain to the judge so that they can rule whether there's probable cause. So I'm not quite sure if that's how it works, but if that's how it works, it sounds like a nice way to go during the day, particularly. If you do take me to a magistrate at night, they will take you to jail first because there's no magistrates open, and you may have to spend the evening in jail on one of those nice drunk tanks, which is not the most pleasant experience. But for protesters who are fighting this law, it's not. It sort of goes with the territory, and that may be what happens in the next round of protests. And at the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUF, the group I work with, we talked about this on Wednesday, yesterday, and it looks like that we're planning another event coming up during the first city council meeting. We're not entirely clear on this, but we'll see what homeless people want to do, talk to homies for the homeless, see what they want to do, and they are there's going to be a council meeting the second Tuesday in September. It might be a good time for a teach-in and a sleep-out and another mass educational event. And who knows, maybe a press conference announcing the filing of the lawsuit at the same time. Though I can't speak for the attorneys. But what happened? Let's hear some of the tapes as to what went down on August 19th, last Saturday.
Okay, well, it's around 3:50 a.m., August 18th, Saturday morning, here at City Hall. We're talking with
Christopher Williams.
Hey, Chris. And I see that no police car is immediately in evidence, but about half an hour ago you called me, and I was called actually by Sean and Donna, and then I spoke with Damone and Amanda, and they said there were, what, a number of police officers wandering around the vicinity, waking people up.
That is true.
And you say that the police were offering you little pieces of paper?
Yes, sir.
$50 bills, perhaps, to take lodging? Or
no, they were handing out homeless resource packets, and we asked them, do you have another place for us to go? And they told us, no.
But they were handing out homeless resource packets. This is sort of a joke. What was the plan here?
Apparently, their plan was to get us to move and to come up our stand of a peaceful protest.
Uh-huh. As far as the homeless resource code or the homeless resource card goes, they handed out the Coral Street shelter, the River Street shelter, which is all the same unit anyway, was pretty much the only shelter program in there, and of course we know they're full. So it was a joke. It was a joke.
Now, did anyone ask the officers if they had a place to go tonight, right now, at legal place?
Several of us asked them, do you have a place for us that we can go right now that you're taking us away from here? And all of them kind of chuckled and said, well, no, that's not our problem.
Yeah. That was funny.
And your name is?
Shane.
And you are?
John.
And who are you, madam?
Amanda.
I see. So, how many people were sleeping here tonight before the police came and disturbed everyone?
I think the count was at 23.
And 25.
Oh, 25.
The count was at 25, now down to 24.
And how many people are here now?
I just saw three people walking off that way, so it brings us down to about 22 people. But I don't know who snuck off in the back.
They came to the RV first.
Yeah, they started pounding
your RV is parked in front of City Hall. Here.
Right. And it's legally registered and all that kind of stuff. And I was wide awake. I was not sleeping or nothing. I was actually wide awake. And they tried to tell me that I was sleeping and camping in the RV and all this kind of stuff. And they're going to do this and do that. And they ordered me out of the vehicle. I said, no, you have to have a warrant to even open this private dwelling on the door, on the RV part, you know. You should have seen the look on his face when I said that. His eyes shifted down like this, and his lips buckled up, and he's all, oh, yeah, this guy's right.
Who was the officer, you know, who made that request?
You know, under stress, I am very bad at remembering people's names, so that's a useless question for me.
No problem, man, no problem.
I mean, it was like...
I did try to take photographs with my cell phone, but it's just too dark, and the attack came so unwarranted that nobody had a chance to set up a proper camera.
Yeah, him and we both got a couple of videos of it.
You guys did get a couple shots?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
People,
I got videos here that even you, Robert, would love to see. I have it right now on my videos set up. So.
You're showing me your cell phone video. Police officer and one of the walls.
We're going to make it a good
morning. Morning.
So I have let people know as protesters, you know.
Is that me?
No, that's the gentleman that was sleeping in the
morning. Morning.
Good morning.
The second one.
Morning, Bear.
Is me?
The second one is you guys.
Bear.
How you guys doing?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Keeping up.
Basically told everyone that since the police gave this sneak attack on the weekend, I'm sure they, I don't know what they did, if they talked with the mayor about this or not, if he's working in cahoots with them, we don't know. All we know is that we were raided about 3 o'clock in the morning. They came in heavy, and they all warned us. They said the next time they're going to cite us, and after that they're going to arrest us.
Uh-huh. Well, actually, if you're simply sleeping inside a sleeping bag, provided you're not intending to camp and stay the night, as you're not having a campsite with a tent and so forth, they can only give you a ticket. They can't arrest you. It's an infraction. Of course, I guess they can do whatever they want. You know, they do whatever they want, but legally they have limited options.
And these are trespassing. We're
listening to a recording of something that happened about 45 minutes ago.
Interesting.
So, here are the options that, you know.
That's on video, dude.
Here are the options that I see you might have. Are you? If you sleep only in a sleeping bag and you are simply sleeping, it's only an infraction. But in theory, they can arrest you on a repeated infraction because you intend to keep repeating the same infraction, they think. But you can only be convicted of an infraction, so it's going to be a fine or community service if it ever goes to trial. And if you get convicted, because there's a
touching her, he's taking the woman, trying to get her up.
If there's no legal place for you to go when you go to court, you get a letter from the Homeless Services Center to that effect, the ticket will be thrown out. That doesn't mean you won't spend time in jail over the weekend if they want to fuck with you. You know, that's the story. So, that's some of the options you have tonight. Are you can leave now. You can stay and get a ticket and assuming they do what they say they're going to do. Of course, they can always change their minds and not come back. You know, they can.
Yeah, we are.
And someone is passing by.
Our job at this time as some of the core of the group is we're going to come together and talk about this latest situation and talk about different counter moves. And of course, we're going to win eventually. Why? Because it's an inhumane law.
I certainly hope so. No question about it.
Thank you for your time, sir. How many? It wasn't me. You might want to find out who it was. But how many? What the percentage was of useless drug addicts that were homeless?
I see. Well, that's a very interesting question. How about useless drug addicts that are on the police force? I don't know if we want to get into that, but or useless violence addicts.
I just felt it was kind of seriously prejudiced for a cop to come down here and just start saying that 90%. With nothing to back him up, knock himself up. 90% of
the... Did you hear this yourself, or you heard this?
No, it was one of the guys that was here, so I says, you might want to find him.
Yeah.
But he says 90% of the homeless out here are useless drug addicts, I believe is the wording that he used.
And your name, sir?
John.
So, John, you guys are going to chat about what you want to do, and that's... Are you? I see you have your bags with you planning to take off?
Yeah, I gotta take off. I don't need to get arrested tonight. I got to work in the morning.
Uh-huh. What kind of work do you do?
I'm rebuilding a hookah lounge.
Okay.
Downtown's Wired Wash Cafe.
Oh, cool.
We're going to squat it out and see what happens. We have an extra mattress for... the mayor. There's no blanket and no pillow, but if he waits in line like a...
She, actually.
Excuse me. My bad.
Emily Riley.
I'm just waking up. If she waits in line like a good little girl and is able to get a blanket and pillow at 3:30 in the morning, more power to her. She's better than the protesters. We love you. We really do. But you need to change your ways.
Thank you, Barr. Take care.
Bye, that guy.
All right. Okay, Amanda?
They told me that they, when they woke me up, that one, they could give me a ticket for a citation for camping, mm-hmm. and two, they could give me a citation for having my dog not on a leash. That was the first thing they asked me when I woke up this morning, and they asked me for my ID.
Possibly true. I don't know what the actual dog laws are, and that's something you got to look into or be aware of. I think people, if people want to do this as a political protest and they want to leave tonight, they should figure for a point to reassemble at some point, someplace they can come back to.
Yeah.
Guys, if you're interested, on Sunday at 2 o'clock, we're going to be doing a protest in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. The Bookshop Santa Cruz is run by the mayor, the vice mayor, Ryan Cooner. He's the chief worker there. Actually, the owner is his father, the supervisor. So in case you leave here and then you want to make contact with us again, you can do that, or you can get in touch with us at Huff. Us being me. The people here at the campground are going to be here.
Nice.
No, you ain't up there.
He took off. So have most people taken off? Or?
There was a lot of people.
Yeah, there was a lot of people, but as soon as the cops show up, they're so accustomed to it. The cops show up and tell you to move on, and you just got to go find someplace else to sleep, you know?
3 o'clock in the morning, we're half shell-shocked.
Right.
You know, it just happens so much, people just get used to it.
Okay.
Used to it, but we're not finished with it.
All right. Well, see you then, and hopefully later, or you know, we'll get in touch. As I said, if you want to, you can check. There's a meeting of the Human Rights Organization, 2 o'clock later today at the Firefly Hotel, off Hotel Cafe, or they may meet here, if one of these two places.
All right. I believe there's also a mention of at the Chow Hall, too, for tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, where is that?
We're going to be meeting, a core of us concerning the protest will be meeting at the Elm Street Church right after lunch there. It's usually from 12 to about 12:45 tomorrow.
Okay, and there's also the meal of Dennis Adams at Town Clock is happening too, right?
That's correct. These are just different meetings to counter the most recent situations here.
Okay. All right.
Good luck, Mayor.
How you doing?
Cheerio,
then. Thank you. Good luck.
And not as exciting as you might think. No head busting, no shouting, though the police did show up again, and there was more tape of that. It's kind of depressing, actually. I was asked a question by a caller who wondered how long these particular protesters had been in town. And the answer ranges from all their lives, in the case of one of them, to folks who just showed up in the last few weeks who are just passing through. And I don't really have an estimate for the people who stayed at City Hall every night, because there were 20 to 30 of them. And the protesters made lists of the people who were there, again, with an eye to documenting the need for shelter and the failure of the city to provide shelter and the kind of cost that the city was incurring by harassing people, not so much to the good citizens of the city, but the cost in human terms to people who are being denied safe shelter. A little more from this tape before I try to find something a little more exciting.
So we have a group of about six or seven people here. It's about 4 o'clock.
It is 4 o'clock.
And I'm talking with
John Barnett.
And John, you have something more to report about this latest raid?
Yeah, the police department came in, woke us all up at 3:15 or so. After he woke us up, I asked directly, do you have a place for us to go, to where we can go back to sleep, where we can legally camp? They said, no, we don't have anything, and they thought it was actually a funny question. And I said, okay, great, if you've got no place for us to go, what happens next? The police officer says, well, we're giving warnings now. We're going to come back through the second time. We're going to give citations. The third time we come back through, anybody still here will be arrested and incarcerated for 48 hours or until a magistrate can get to them.
You told them, you said...
Oh, and they're going to destroy any belongings that are here, too. They said they will take, confiscate, and destroy any belongings.
And destroy any belongings.
Yes.
Interesting.
And more of this in a moment, but we do have someone on the line. Hi there, caller. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, what's your name, caller?
Amisha.
Yes. Anisha?
Amisha.
Amisha?
Yes.
Sounds like,
yes.
Isn't that peace in some language?
Amisha means beautiful woman.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds appropriate. So, Amisha, I know we talked earlier, but I guess you're calling in the teeth of an eviction threat, and that's what you wanted to talk about?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, when I moved in here, the owner said we weren't allowed to talk to the homeless or to feed them or to even be seen with them or have them on the property.
Now, how is he going to tell who's homeless and who's not?
Well, he has two managers on site. Well, one is a lady, and one is, I like to call, KKK.
And where are you calling from? What building or what are you talking about?
155 Felker Street Apartments.
Okay. And what? How many people live at the Felker Street Apartments?
There's about 30.
Okay.
And 30 apartments.
Now, are you calling from inside or outside your apartment?
I'm inside my apartment.
Okay, and people, I guess you talked to some people before the show and told them you were calling in? Is that right?
Yes.
So they may be listening to this on the radio?
Yeah, if they might be.
And if anybody is listening, by the way, there is an alternate number you can call in on. And that number, for those listening, grab a pencil and I'll give it to you in a moment. It is 469-3119, 469-3119. If you want to join this discussion, if you have any questions of Amisa or is it Amisa or Anisa?
Amisa.
Amisa. And Amisa, how long have you lived at the Felker Street apartments?
2 years.
And are you disabled in any way? What's your situation?
Yes, I'm disabled and in Social Security.
And you've learned recently that you're about to be evicted?
Yes. Yes, during a potluck I threw for the neighbors. I paid for everything and had music and had a nice time, except for the KKK guy, which is the second manager.
By KKK, are you saying that the guy is a member of the KKK, or he seems to
Well, that's the 60% body language you can tell off of him.
So he's sort of use some other words that might explain it to people who don't understand what that means.
Huff-puff, a body, well, 30% of your language is only part of describing a person.
No, but what kind of body language are we talking about? I mean, give me a sense.
Racist, discrimination, racist.
So how is he a racist? How can you tell this?
Because I'm Raghav and Wop. My boyfriend's Mexican. And there's a couple international people here, and he has problems with issues with all of them.
In what way?
He just talks two-faced, and he gets them thrown out. Usually those are the ones that go.
So you think that of the people who've been evicted, they're more predominantly people of color?
Yes.
Do you have any hard and fast stats on that? I mean, is
yes,
that...
Yes, I have. The most they get warning notices, and I've helped people by paying their rent for them. I've told them how to do it, get resources to protect their rights, and, to get them to stay. So before that, they would make up lies instead about them and say that they're too loud or they're selling drugs. Well, the manager, the second manager, the KKK guy, he has marijuana. He's got the upstairs guy selling for himself.
Well, remember, marijuana is legal provided you are selling it as a medical marijuana provider and
not
making a huge profit.
Yeah, but not a manager.
Well, even a manager can do that. But, I mean, I understand kind of what you're saying. You're saying, why should one... I'm not quite sure what the actual reason for these evictions. Why are you being evicted? What is the claim?
I wasn't told. And I wasn't told. I can't get a straight answer. They said there was a petition. And there's none produced. The owner told me if I went around and asked about it, that he would call the police before I left or after I left.
Now, this is the owner and not the harsh manager you call the KKK manager. So the owner is also hostile to you?
Yes, he's also very... He said my boyfriend was crazier than anybody because he's Mexican.
Just because he's Mexican, or there's some specific...
Yeah, because he's never talked to him. He's just seen him and said hi and goodbye and shook his hand.
Well, it's true, of course, in California that landlords are very, very powerful. They don't have to give you a reason. Are they evicting you on a 30-day notice or a 60-day notice? 60-day notice.
And I have surgery in 30 days.
What kind of surgery?
I have a surgical hernia that where my tubes are getting tied up. My intestines are out right now, but I could die during this surgery if I don't go this time in. I've been postponing it for 2 years because of just anything on your body near the cut. They can't operate at that time.
So, and you presented this situation to the owner and the manager, and they're not sympathetic, huh?
Yes.
What do they say?
That's not their problem. It's not their problem.
Okay. And have you talked to other tenants about this, or maybe tried
yes.
to get?
Yes, they. Yes, and they don't know either why, and they have had nothing about it, and they turned it around. They want to get a petition against him and get him thrown out.
And is that petition actually being circulated?
Well, people said they'll start it Saturday, but it depends, you know, people what they say and what they do.
You haven't seen the petition yet.
Well, they're gonna. It's to save Tammy. Is called to save Tammy and get rid of Kevin.
Well, it sounds a little bit like what happened with old Donna Dice a year or so ago. She's an activist who was working with the City Hall sleepers, the City Hall protesters in the sleep out, which we were actually just playing some tape about,
uh-huh.
Some audio tape.
Right, that's what reminded me about it.
You know, and she actually, for years, she was she was with the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. In fact, she was the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, and she helped people to fight these evictions. Are you planning to fight this eviction in court?
Well, no, I promise. It's not with the owner, no, because he's just doing his job. He's not here.
Why is it his job to evict you?
It's because he's listening to the manager.
Well, that doesn't mean he should be evicting you. I mean, a person who is foolish enough to listen to false information, and I assume you've told the owner this is false.
Yes, I did.
And you also say the owner is hostile to you.
Yes, yes.
So why aren't you contesting this eviction?
What?
Why don't you contest the eviction?
I want to take the second manager to court on this because he's the one that lied.
Well, do you want to take him to? What are you going to do? You're going to do this from the street, or while you're you're dying after your surgery on the sidewalk?
I'm going through with my surgery and finding a place see if this petition if they really do start this petition or if it's talk. Because they could get thrown out, too.
Well, you know,
people.
It seems to me that you have a right to organize the tenants, too. You can go.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to go around and ask if they. Because I was told there was a petition against me. That's why it was being thrown out.
Right, but again, I think, you know, what we're talking about is, are there conditions under which all the tenants are living? Like, for example, this sounds outrageous, this idea, if it's true, if you're accurately describing it to me, that you're not allowed to associate with homeless people or feed homeless people.
Oh, no, not at all. And I'm supposed to leave windows open, my curtains, at all times.
Well, that's because you're so attractive and they want to hug you, probably.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right, yeah, certainly. That sounds like another unreasonable condition, and this could be the basis if other people are objecting to it. You might want to put this on a petition and says, you know, that you're protesting it, that you get a bunch of people to sign this petition, maybe even consider a, dare I say it, rent strike.
Yeah.
Right. That's where you say, we ain't going to pay no stinking rent until you change the conditions of tenancy. If all the renters in the country did that, the landlords and the property horseshit would come tumbling down. The sooner the better, as I'm concerned. But, of course, it's not likely to happen tomorrow.
No, not at all.
What are you looking for from the free radio audience? What can we do to help you? Again, I don't know if you're telling me the truth or lying. I want to point this out to the audience. I know you. I mean, we lived in the same building about 11, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you seem like a nice
well,
tenant.
You
may
know
have
what
had a
kind
few
of neighbor I am. I help
habits.
Everybody. I go under God's law, being good to your neighbor. Like I said, I've paid rent for people that
I mean,
were
nor have I talked to the rent. I haven't talked to the landlord or to the manager about this issue. I haven't heard their side of the story. Maybe you're concealing stuff that I don't know about and the audience doesn't know about.
You're more than welcome to come over and see the contract.
Right, and I don't even know if the landlord or the manager would want to even talk to me. But this is an opportunity, however, for you, and has been an opportunity for you to,
uh-huh.
you know, to have a forum. And if anybody else is having similar problems with their landlord or has any reaction to this whole thing, I encourage you to call in. You can call in here with Amisa still on the line, and it's your number to call for this second line is 469-3119, 469-3119. That's the number to call. I appreciate your calling in. Amisa, and I encourage you to keep us abreast of what's happening with this petition. I don't really know what you can do quite at this time with respect to the landlord or the manager, you know, in terms of either A, protecting yourself. You can protect yourself against a retaliatory eviction. In fact, I suggest that you leave a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, asking me for Donna Dice's number. Donna has a very long experience in dealing with landlord horse shit, if you will. That is to say, inappropriate practices by landlords. And I'm not saying that tenants don't screw over landlords as well. That can happen, but usually my sympathies, perhaps because I'm a tenant and have been all my life, is with the tenants. So there you are.
Okay.
In fact, I might be able to give you that number, and I believe...
Okay, let me get a pen here.
I think I'll give it to you off air because I want to make sure that Donna wants it out on the air. I think she does because she actually has given it before. But I'm going to give it to you off air. And then if other people want to call in, you can either call the station for... 427-3772 is the normal studio line, and we can talk
and
more.
And also may I throw in that this second manager, I drove out the other night to go somewhere, and he followed me, ripping out of here, following me everywhere where I went. I went to the Indian restaurant and went to my girlfriend's and cried and came back home. And this guy is following me. You know? I just...
Well, it's true. Now, if this is stalking, it's a crime. Have you reported it to the police?
Well, no, that just happened one day. I mean, I can't say, you know, he could have been going to the same place, but it was just kind of strange. You know, I can't say that right now.
Well, so, you know, it also depends on your feeling. If you have a hostile history with this person...
He has a hostile history with everybody here.
Right. Well, I would say continue, you know, what you're doing and keep us advised. And again, I will leave me a message off the air again, and I will get you Donna Dice's number, and she can possibly give you some advice.
Okay. I'd really appreciate that.
And don't stop holding those potlucks. I mean, you want to get the community together. That sounds like a good thing, not a bad thing to me.
No, it was great, and it started it. Was the potluck, he had all the info for the two band members that showed up, and he was very rude to them and told them he didn't know nothing about it, and he was here when we agreed in the circle.
So you were saying you attempted to sabotage the event by...
And he cost me an extra hour to pay for the band.
Right.
You know, and we had nothing together by the time they showed up.
Well... Okay. Is there anything more you want to say about this?
I just pray and leave it in the God's hand, and just I'm going to take it to the court civilly. And
have you ever done that before? Have you ever taken these cases to court civilly, or?
I had one roommate one time that did never paid rent, and I ended up on Judge Mathis instead. I filed here, and I took it to Chicago and won.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your calling in, and please call back with any updates, and leave me a message so I can put you in touch with TRUSC, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz activist Donna Dice.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for sharing the story with us, even though, you know, you may face some discrimination because you do.
Yeah, I do.
Appreciate that, Amisa.
Okay. And I appreciate your time, Robert.
Thank you.
You're a very lovely person.
Hey, you bet I am. You're not so bad yourself. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. In the studio with me, the strong, silent, and digitally cameratizing Linda LeMaster, chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force. Did you ever run into any problems like that, Linda, around landlords who would not allow tenants to talk to homeless people? Did that ever come up at a Homeless Issues Task Force meeting, or...?
As far as Homeless Issues Task Force, I think there was some talk about that, but I didn't get to deal with it directly. But at other times in my life, I have. I've known of a lot of people who were basically not allowed to use their apartment as an ordinary person using their home. When they first opened the Nearly Lagoon, remember Marilyn lived there, I think. Marilyn Weaver?
One of the members of the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah, a member of it. And I think she was still homeless then during the task force. But soon after that, she was one of the early people to move in. And she got all kinds of flack. It left me feeling like it was mostly some competitive emotionalism, and it didn't have any substance to it. But how do you defend yourself against a gang attack?
I'm not quite sure I understand what you're talking about, Linda. Can you clarify?
Well, housing. Being harassed.
She got all kinds of flack. From who?
Her own kids, her neighbors.
For?
Living. I mean, it's like people...
I don't understand. What was the basis in which they gave her a flag? What did they say? You're too tall, you smell bad, I don't like...
We don't want you here. The same thing homeless people give for sitting down.
Because she had previously been homeless?
I don't know that, Robert. I don't know why they picked that family to excoriate.
Let me interrupt you. We're looking to determine whether... we're looking for a homeless angle here. So is there a homeless angle here or not?
I guess I'm just assuming, and I thought you would, Robert, that homeless people have a harder time after they've been homeless more than 2 or 3 months becoming housed. There's this unnameable shield they have to bust through, you know? I know for me, when I was homeless, I was very quiet. I didn't want my boss or other people to know I was homeless. That's why I do what I do now.
What do you do now, Linda?
Well,
aside from not getting any medical care for that cough.
I get some. I'm luckier than most.
Yeah.
Than most homeless people. I consort with homeless people. I eat with homeless people. I talk to homeless people.
Has your landlord threatened to evict you for these activities?
Often. I mean, a couple times specifically because I let people in. Yeah. My friend Shannon, whom you know, I don't know if I should put her last name over the air in this spontaneous way, was harassed by her landlord and told by a judge that now that she had a house, she should not have anything to do with her friends who were homeless. And they held her kids in the foster care system over her when the judge laid it on her. But mostly my own personal experience when I was a mother and had kids I was raising was my own landlords or their managers. And it's been a problem. The place I last lived before where I live now, Robert, you know that place. It's down near going toward the boardwalk. They had a file on me every time my name was in the paper, which it was more often back then. I was more stable or able-bodied. And they actually had what I consider to be an illegal blackballing file started with newspaper clippings. But they hired a friend of mine to be the property manager at one point, so she brought them all over and gave them to me, or I'd have never known they were doing that.
Actually, there were press clippings. They were amazed that you were present. And
yeah. I was glad they'd done that for me, but, you know, who knows how long they would have been stalking me in a file if I hadn't happened to have a friend they hired.
Well, Linda, I've got you in the studio here, and I'm going to kind of squeeze you a few other bits of information. You recently wrote a rather lengthy article for the Street Spirit newspaper, currently in the public library, for anybody who wants to read it, on a successful homeless necessity defense that defeated the sleeping ban in local court, at least in the case of one medical marijuana user, Craig Canada, who's occasionally in here, and who is really the butt of all kinds of abuse on the Sentinel forums. That's the Santa Cruz Sentinel's online newspaper. Are you plotting another article for Street Spirit?
No, I'm not plotting, but I've been told, both by you and by the publisher-editor, that they could use one if it had a set word count. So I guess that you're not the only one that feels it was way too long. I agree, by the way.
Oh, I didn't think it was too long.
I would be interested in some actual critical feedback as writer to writer someday, by the way. This is to remind you.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I think you do great. And I think if people want to read this article, they can find it in the library, or they can go, homeless people sell this newspaper called Street Spirit for a buck on the streets. I encourage people to check it out.
It's the August issue of Street Spirit.
Yeah, Homies for the Homeless was selling it, the group that was at City Hall. So if you want to call in and talk to a person who actually may know more about homelessness than anybody. Well, many people around Santa Cruz. You're I would call. Not only are you an expert, but Judge Guy Dineen, or Dineen Guy, actually, is her name. Last name Guy, first name Dineen, who found Craig Canada not guilty of all these charges of sleeping because he was a medical marijuana user, and there are no medical marijuana users allowed inside any of the facilities. And, of course, there aren't, nobody else is allowed in any of the facilities anyway because there's no shelter during the summer, which is why the police raids are so outrageous at City Hall this last week. But you were accepted as an expert there by the judge. What was your? Tell us a little bit about
that. Yeah, I had a role to play in that as an expert witness, which is kind of how I found out about it. And my expertise had to do with the fact that some of the volunteer work I do.
Go ahead. That
wow.
was just a. We won't talk about what that
okay.
was.
Okay. And that was the rats getting away, I think. So I was supposed to speak expertly as a member of the Homeless Action Partnership, which is also a formal name for it, is the Continuum of Care. That name happens to be dictated by HUD, so it's a federal name. And I've been going to these meetings for a long time. A couple other homeless people and activists have gone in the past, including Jim Moran, who's dead now, died in the last year. And Nicholas Whitehead, who used to go, it doesn't go now. But mostly it's supposed to be a community-wide, county-wide collaboration. But the active people are usually the nonprofit service providers who deal with homeless services. And so after all these meetings, I kind of know what shelters have what rules. You know, part of my job was to help figure out what money HUD was going to give our county's providers. So I talked about that, and the more I said, the faster the judge asked me these questions. So she convinced me I was a good witness, too.
I was very impressed because I know that she initially, of course, she was prepared, I thought, to dismiss all these charges with a letter from one of the homeless services that the shelters were full, which, of course, Craig Canada didn't bring in because he had been banned from these shelters. Not because of the marijuana, but because of other problems that had happened there in terms of he's a gay older man, and he had gotten in some arguments with people who were using what he described as homophobic comments. And Craig is a little sensitive to stuff, as far as I'm concerned, at different points. But in other points, you know, and I was not present for these incidents, he suffers a lot of abuse because he's sort of, he's triply disadvantaged. He's a medical marijuana user who really insists on the principle of being able to medicate. He's disabled. He's gay, and he's also elderly, and he carries his life around with him on his backpack. He also is very articulate. He has a website, palmspringsbum.com or .org, I can never sure which, but and if you want to read updates on the medical marijuana struggle across the country and in this and also his own log which chronicles his activities, which chronicles his struggles, you can go there. And I bet, you know, I mean, it's not the always the sweetest person to be around, but he takes responsibility for what he does. If he gets angry with you and goes off on you and says, go to hell, and stalks off, the next day he will apologize because, you know, that can happen sometimes.
I think that we really should have a more tolerant standard for people we know are homeless or otherwise pushed out of the whole fabric of society than we have for our immediate neighbors, our best friends. I mean, I was pretty snarly, too. That's how come I got in trouble with my kids. It's hard to cope with being homeless day in and day out. I'm surprised it doesn't kill more people than it does. It destroys people. I don't mean that as an excuse for Craig or anybody else. I try real hard not to internalize it and take it personally when somebody goes off who doesn't even have a place to sleep, having been there.
Yeah, that sounds like sensible advice.
It's not easy, but you can learn, you can teach yourself not to react. And then people think I'm a nice person, you know, because I listen. I don't get upset just because they're in a snarly mood. If they do aim it at me, I'm kind of hopeless. But, you know, you could think about, well, is this person homeless? You know, it's just like saying, oh, that person's deaf. I can't expect them to hear me. You know, a person who doesn't have a place to sleep, you can't expect them to function. Well, maybe homelessness is more deadly, but in this sense, it's a parallel.
The Santa Cruz Sentinel, after printing a good story by Jennifer Squires on Friday, and again, this is my judgment, but it talked about the shelter shortage and the reason the protesters were there, and the specific gave specific testimony from them, and it quoted the mayor, the vice mayor's commentary. Follow that up with a Sunday story that this was last Sunday that was very prejudicial, had a lot of press releases from the police department, made a lot of claims I talked about earlier in the show that I'm trying to document whether they were true or false. I'm trying to get to the bottom of what complaints were actually made of the protesters at City Hall. And it's really, in a way, it's a fool's errand I'm on, because whenever you have a homeless protest, you know, you're going to see some problems that come up, but you're also going to see the police and the authorities smearing the protest with this because, frankly, in my view, they cannot address the basic issue, which is that it is unconscionable, both by almost any religious standard, to arrest people for sleeping when you have no legal place for them to go, and they're poor people who largely come from your own community. Now, I got a call from a regular caller who's often a critic of mine who asked, well, how many of these people are local? Yeah. And I know that I always don't have such stats in my hands, even for the homeless population generally. You probably faced that question a number of times as the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force 7-8 years ago when you were doing that work.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't have a good memory for numbers, but I can tell you and all your listeners how to find that easily. Both, I know it's on the website of the Shelter Project, which is a community action board project, and it should be posted on the county website, but I'm not very computer literate, so you're kind of on your own when it comes to the slashes and whatever. But the two surveys that I'm familiar with both came up with 60% and well more than 60% of the people who are chronically homeless and here being locals. And they defined locals, and it meant either you grew up here or you'd been here more than 3 years and had a fixed address on your own, like as a grown-up, before you were homeless. The definition ranged between those two poles. And I don't think people want to know that most of the local homeless people are here because they're local people. Because, you know, we all have this cherished delusion that people want to come here because this is our little paradise wagon with our little private beaches because they're homeless. And of course, you know, I heard the same thing when I was a young mother, when I was, what, 20, in Florida. You hear it all over the country. I was visiting in Bakersfield once, and I ran into people at their post office that were talking like, oh, they're just coming here to take advantage of our food stamps, as if the food stamps weren't distributed equally from our taxes by the federal government, you know. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't more of an impact here by homeless people, but, you know, the percentage of people who are homeless is like less than 1% in terms of other things people complain about. I mean, if you look at tourists, you find a lot bigger percentage of people who leave trash, need bathrooms, sleep in their cars. You know, they're coming over here to play at the boardwalk. They're not here because they were born here or they lost their job here or this is where they have to stay if they ever want to see their kid they're estranged from, their children, or all the reasons, real family reasons, just like housed people get.
I'm kind of trying to find that thing you mentioned online, the Community Action Board, and to see if I can see the...
You could try the county and then... Human Resources
Agency.
The
Shelter Project Community Action Board.
I know they have
.org.
Data from at least
our mission, fast links, CAB programs. I think
CAB,
here's
shelter
the status of poverty in Santa Cruz 2005, and here's a chapter on housing and homelessness. Let's see what we got.
Can I make a plug?
Sure.
The CAB Shelter Project, as many homeless people know, but everybody should know, initiated the phone service so homeless people could have a voicemail. And they were ahead of, you know, they kind of created that here Paul Brundell found the funds through a private donor to build that system, and now they have them in all kinds of cities, big cities all over the country for homeless people. It was a brilliant move.
Here's some quotes from the consequences of homelessness from a report, Status of Poverty in Santa Cruz County 2005, so it's not entirely up to date, but let's see what we got here. If I can find the proper section again.
Shelter Project also tries to keep people from losing their housing, but that program depends on rich people sending their extra money. So it usually only works in the dead of winter.
Put more easily into, I think, investment funds and some financing for mortgages. It takes money to make money, Linda. You're going to have to, you know, invest it where it's going to go. I mean,
well, there's a lot of religious people that just, you know, they could wake up and think about homeless people as human beings.
No, the churches in this area are well known.
The people who go to
churches in this area are well known for the kind of compassion they have. I know that there are over 200, and at least 12 allow homeless people to sleep in their parking lots and their vehicles.
In a city that made it legal.
In a city that does make it legal for you to park your vehicle in a church parking lot with the permission of the church, no more than three vehicles per church parking lot. Anyway, here's from the report, the Community Action Board's report. At some time in the last year, 2005 or 2004, 3% of the households in Santa Cruz County have experienced homelessness, according to the Community Assessment Project Year 9, 2003 report. A telephone survey of currently housed Santa Cruz County residents. This is slightly less than what was reported in the previous year, but more than double the percentage reported in 2001. Youth 18 to 24 were much more likely to have been homeless in the previous year. And my computer is going to be homeless in a moment because I may throw it on the ground.
No.
I won't do that.
Just curse it. You're on the air.
That 7,800 number does not include the... from the Community Action Project 2003 report, we can project that the number of county residents who were housed at the time of the survey but who had experienced homelessness was nearly 7,800 people. 7,800 people does not include the county residents who were homeless when the survey was conducted and therefore was not reflected in the Community Action Project 2003 findings. So there are a lot of people. And again, getting back, the four most significant conclusions reached concerning homeless people in the last few years are that, one, of all the people who are going to be homeless in Santa Cruz County over the course of the coming year, most are currently housed. Prevention services are very important. Mm-hmm. Homeless people don't come from somewhere else. They are mostly from Santa Cruz County, and they are our neighbors, our sons and our daughters and our friends. This is to that previous caller.
And our nieces and our grandmothers.
Homeless people are overwhelmingly want to live in a home. They're not homeless because they want to be. Most people are homeless for less than 6 months. People cycle in and out of homelessness. More than half the homeless people between the ages of 30 and 50, more than half have children. Surprisingly, 28.4% said they grew up in Santa Cruz County. And the report contradicted a common misconception, the magnet theory, that homeless people come from somewhere else. In fact, more than two-thirds reported that their last permanent housing was in Santa Cruz County. That's two-thirds. Only 1 in 10 cited their last permanent housing in another U.S. state. In addition, 81% have lived here for more than a year, and of those, more than half said they had lived in Santa Cruz County for more than 10 years, while 23% have lived here for more than 20 years. Now, the question asked me by the caller was, what about the protests? Maybe these are outside agitators who are doing this.
Oh, yeah, they always pull that one out of their ear.
Well, you know, and the truth of the matter...
Anytime it's effective, like, whoa, these people must be from out of town, never seen them before, but it's really, you haven't looked around.
We are kind of pathetic here in town, it's true. I wish we were more effective. Phone number to call in, by the way, is 427-3772. Let's let some of these protesters speak for themselves, and you can judge just what kind of machinations they're up to.
Yeah, I figure the best tactic is badger them mercilessly. It's psychological warfare. I told the guy that woke me up that I knew that the city was violating the state charter and the county's violating the state charter.
It's like we're putting this on slow speed.
In
the city are violating the state charter by not building housing for the people that actually work here, according to the California Rural Legal Aid suit that just got won, and they're continuing to ignore it. And what they're basically doing is they're operating extra legally because they're not building housing for people like me who actually work here, and they're building housing for the commuter class. And by extension, what they're doing is they're taking their own extra legal behavior and passing that criminalization along to us because they didn't build housing for people that make low incomes in this area. And I insisted not only on telling the guy that woke me up, but going on over and telling the other guy, just so they knew that I knew that they're operating outside the law. They didn't seem really, really interested in doing any ticket writing because I think intrinsically they know that I'm right at some level or another. I think they just ran out of things to do after the bars shut down and they were all in a group. And
how many were there?
There were eight, nine, somewhere in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, eight or nine, full uniform. They just showed up in forces as a way of impressing us that they were actually here or something like that.
Did you notice the names of any of them?
Yeah. Well, I recognize most of them from around town. There's a short guy with dark brush back hair. I don't know any of their names. I didn't notice any of the guys that I know by name, which is, I'm not involved in police culture. I don't know, hey, officer so-and-so.
You don't have police trading cards?
No, I don't have police trading cards. Besides, they need to do them like the terrorist trading cards. They're not really playing cards because just like a terrorist, when you get rid of one, there's 10 more to take their place. The cops, you know, they move around, so it's more like ball cards or something.
Well, two of them did give cards. Officer Mulvihill and Officer Jones, you have two cards.
I didn't ask for a card. Maybe I should have.
Okay, thank you, Lee. What's your name?
My name is Matt, and when those two cops came and woke me up, I asked for the card, business card, so I could have some kind of proof that they are buzzing me and woke me up early in the morning.
Now, are you joining a lawsuit against the city for police harassment of homeless people? Would you like to join that lawsuit?
Yes, if I can, I will.
Okay, what is your last name and say it and spell it?
Morrison, Morrison.
Okay, and do you have a contact point or contact number where you can be reached?
Yes, he can be contacted at my number. My name is Chris Williams. You can be contacted at 831-332-6574.
Do you mind if this goes out over the air, or do you want this confidential?
No, it can go out over the air.
Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay. So what you need to do is you need to come together, come either to the next meeting of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is on Wednesday morning at the courthouse, or you can come today to a meeting of the Human Rights Organization, which is either going to be here or at the Firefly Cafe, which is on Front Street. Probably be here.
Okay, I was
assuming you guys are still here.
I will show up.
Okay. And Chris, I take it you want to be a member of the lawsuit, a plaintiff.
Yes, sir, I do.
And you, Amanda?
I am already a plaintiff.
Okay, so that's you're way ahead of me.
Yeah, I'm way ahead of you,
Robert. And Lee, do you want to be a member of the lawsuit against the city?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll take that ticket. They're also violating, as long as they're not building housing for people that actually live here, and even with the homeless, they're violating that court decision from Southern California. I assume that's what this class action is part of. Yeah. They're... As long as they're not building housing for people that actually live and work here, as long as they don't have any sort of homeless shelters, they cannot enforce any laws that single out the homeless. And let me tell you, middle-class people don't cold camp. They come with their little battery-powered TVs and a tent and things like that. Cold camping is a realm of someone that's like deep woods backpacking or someone that's homeless or, you know, working poor or something, and they can't do it. It's not legal. I'll be glad to join that class action.
You might want to do is talk to Amanda, who has a questionnaire. We give it to Kate Wells, and then we let you give us a contact number or a point, and we get back to you, Lee, on that.
I'm easy to get in touch with.
Indeed. Thank you.
If I gave my phone number on the air, all the girls would be calling me. I know that.
Well, there you have it. We have quite a group of people here.
Okay, Damone, you got woken up here. What's your reaction to all this?
That it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
They know that we've been here for a week. Okay, they at least could have came out of flipping decent hour instead of 2:55 in the morning. And these resource papers that they're handing out are pieces of shit. They need to use them as their own toilet paper because, oh, they come and hand these out for stupid resource papers saying that this is everywhere that we need to be going. Well, I'm sorry to tell them, but these are all shut down during the summer.
But it's a nice piece of paper, isn't it?
No, it's a piece of shit piece of paper.
Let's see what it says. It says that you got the homeless resource center. You can supply clothing, soup kitchen, laundry, and mail can stay on site during the day. Well, that's not entirely true.
Nope, it's a lie.
You can stay on the site if you're performing a particular activity.
No, you cannot. You're only allowed to stay on the lot if you are getting a shower or doing laundry.
Right.
Or if it is raining or snowing, and it's only from 7 in the morning until 10, then they kick you off the lot, which is part of the shelter, and then you're allowed back from 2:30 till 5.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only times that
but
you're...
not at all during the night.
No, not at all during the night.
That says we got... Elm Street Mission Soup Kitchen on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights at 5. Also has shelter services for children and young adults. Why don't you go there?
Because that is a lie. Elm Street Mission used to be a shelter for women, children, and men.
Mm-hmm.
And they closed that down. The city closed them down. All they do now is hand out clothing and food. And youth is only... Monday is only for youth. And that's up to the age of 29. Tuesday, they do not feed, or Thursday.
Okay. Well, there's another, wait a minute, don't give up, there's a New Life Center up on Fair Street. It's primarily a drug alcohol treatment facility. It can address emergency shelter needs of family with children on a limited basis, according to what the officers gave out, the homeless resource card.
That's only if you are on Prop 36. That is all what that program is, and you have to have drug-related crimes.
Well, why don't you have a drug-related crime if you consider becoming a drug criminal?
Well, if they keep this up, yeah, I'm going to start popping no-dos.
Now, there's the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which in the winter months has a shelter sign-up in person daily no later than 3 p.m. at the Homeless Resource Center at 115 Coral Street. What about the ISSP?
It is closed. They do not have that anymore. And the time on there is even wrong. And that's only for the Armory, which is federally funded. And it is closed right now.
Now, what about the church program on the floors of churches? That's for 40 people. Why don't you get to be one of those 40?
Used to be. And they only take the first 12 women, 16 men, and 5 families. And you sign up at 2:30. And they wake you up at 4:30 to help, and you are treated...
4:30 in the morning?
Yes, and you are treated like a slave. You have to help clean the whole church, and you get hauled around like if you are dead cows getting ready to go to the meat market. And last time I was there, I came down with bronchitis, strep throat, and the churches are so filthy, I wouldn't even allow my dead dog to lay there.
And also, of course, it's only for 40 people out of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. Well, wait a minute. There's also the Pajaro Rescue Mission in Watsonville. You could possibly hitchhike to Watsonville.
And that one, the Watsonville, the one in Watsonville only takes men, not females.
It says year-round shelter for men over 18 years, sign-in time 7 p.m. nightly. Boy, they allow you to sign in at 7 rather than at 3. I guess they're pretty liberal there in Watsonville.
Yes.
And you know how big it is? How many men they take?
Jeremy has stayed there, and they take only 60 men.
60 men?
Yes.
Okay.
And, of course, then when we talk about the Santa Cruz homeless, 1,500 to 2,000, that's in the city of Santa Cruz. In the county, which would include Watsonville, I estimate 10,000 to 13,000 homeless, which is based upon the Department of Social Services figure, the people that they served back in 1988 when there was less homeless, when they had 8 to 10,000, that was their estimate. But there are many thousand more homeless in the county than there are in the city.
Yes.
But then those 60 beds are probably not going to take care of all those folks.
No.
Well, finally, there's the downtown outreach worker on Pacific Avenue. Actually, that office has been closed, but I think they moved it to the downtown association so you can both find out where to buy your trinkets and your fancy dresses and possibly get shelter.
No, because they send you to River Street and Coral Street shelter. And
it's the same paper merry-go-round?
Yes, it's... They'd send you... Okay, they have you running around like a chicken with your head cut off in the same circle. And once you get there, they'll tell you, go to Coral Street. They'll give you the address. And then Coral Street will tell you, go back to them, because we don't have a bed for you. And so then the hostess are all like, but they're supposed to be able to help you, da-da-da-da-da, and they give you this line of bullshit.
I see. Well, let's see what else we got here. There's transitional housing. You go to the Paige Smith Community House, the Pajaro Valley Shelter Services. What about those places?
Those are for parolees that are just coming out of jail that are people with serious drug addictions. My sister is at the Pioneer House, and they only take people that have serious drug-related crime.
What about the Paige Smith Community House, which says...
Yeah, the Paige Smith Community House has an 18-month waiting list, and you have to have an income. They take a third of your income. Most homeless people do not have an income.
So it says transitional housing for the homeless, 18 months live-in program, can schedule an interview for admission. And the Pajaro Valley Shelter Services, again, in Watsonville, shelter for women and children up to 3 months for a fee of $30 a week, child care on a sliding scale, transitional housing, 18 to 24 months, no waiting list, drop by for an application.
And they even have a waiting list. They're telling you that they do not. My best friend, Angie, and Kenny, my two best friends, have three children, and have been trying to get into that house for over 2 years and still cannot.
They live in Watsonville?
They live now here in Santa Cruz.
Well, now we also have programs and assistance, the Homeless Persons Health Project, the Veterans Service Center, and the Janus Alcohol Services. What about those? They could crash on their doorstep?
No, you cannot. They will have you arrested.
Well, if they would, well, perhaps you could go instead to the Community Connection, which assists individuals with psychiatric disabilities, if this tries to drive you crazy, in setting and achieving rehabilitation goals, or the Health Services Agency Health Center on Emmeline Street, which provides urgent care on a walk-in basis.
That's only with people with serious mental illnesses, and you have to be, your doctor has to give you a reference to go and be there.
To Emmeline, you mean, or to the place at Harvey West, the Community Connection?
The Community Connection.
Well, Emmeline, then. Why not just go to Emmeline and snooze there in the waiting room?
Because they will also kick you out, and you cannot be there during the night. I used to camp up at Emmeline, and their security, they bring in the Sheriff's Department instead of Santa Cruz PD, and they literally destroy your stuff and remove you.
That does not sound very hospitable to me. Well, let's see. There must be something here. This was given out by the police, this nice little card. Miscellaneous families in transition, they work with the homeless with children.
And if you do not have children, you're not getting anywhere either.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, what about, Career Works on Emmeline Street? They have employment counseling. You could always get a job.
I have been through them, and with the fact that I have severe head trauma, severe disabilities, and if they will not help me because if I take a blow to the back of my head, which I have to put on the application, which makes me a liability, it can kill me, so they will not help me.
They won't give you a head start.
No.
Now, that you can get a voicemail from the Community Action Board, and they can provide...
And I've already got a voicemail, and me and Jeremy did, and we canceled ours out. because we have our cell phones with voicemail on them now.
So you can afford a cell phone, but you can't afford a place to sleep. What is this? How can you? I'm sputtering.
Mm-hmm. How can I afford my cell phone? My ex-husband pays my cell phone bill.
Well, why doesn't he give you a place to sleep?
Because he is also homeless here in Santa Cruz.
Well, he has enough money to give you a cell phone. Why can't he kick down for a motel room or first and last on a small apartment?
Because the apartments, even for a studio apartment here in Santa Cruz, they want first and last, and they run $1,900. Anybody on disability, which my ex-husband is, only gets $960 a month. Motel rooms are anywhere from $55 to $100 a night. So that, okay, you can get like 9 nights out of the month.
Well, it's a start.
It's a start, but it's not going to solve the situation of the fact that we have over 2,000 right here in Santa Cruz that are homeless.
Well, this card also talks about the Santa Cruz AIDS Project. Have you considered getting AIDS and going
back? No, thank you. I have lost 3 of my best friends to the AIDS virus, and including my uncle, and no. And don't plan on coming down with the AIDS virus either.
Well, we also have the number of emergency numbers, which the police have thoughtfully provided. There's suicide prevention, mental health emergency, and youth services. So if you're feeling suicidal after reading the rest of this card, you can call this number. Have you considered that?
I have called the suicide hotline here in Santa Cruz, and you cannot get through to them. My other half, about 4 months ago, was highly suicidal here in Santa Cruz, and you cannot, it's just a recording. And then they say, oh yeah, we'll return your call. Well, they never return your call. And so if you're dead, it's your fault, not theirs. And they say it's a 24-hour suicide line. It is not.
Well, they're trying to have you take responsibility for your own suicide.
Yes.
No, you aren't. I mean, it's sort of an adult approach to suicide. Then we also have, you can call Dominican State Santa Cruz Hospital if you'd like, or the Watsonville Community Hospital. How about that?
That's only if you are seriously ill, and they will not even put you up in the shelter. They only put up, like, people that are suicidal or people with serious mental illnesses.
Well, have you considered walking in front of a car? You could probably call an ambulance and get off to the hospital there, get a night or two.
No, I'm not trying to cause any bodily harm to myself or others.
Well, you see, then you could be considered suicidal, and you could get an additional stay in the psychiatric ward.
No,
well,
thank you.
You're not being very cooperative, Damone. All right, let's see what else we have. We have the County Mental Health Hotline and the Handicapped Crisis Line. Now, you could be considered handicapped. This is sort of a crisis. Why not give them a call?
Because their hours are only from 8 till 5, and it is, the time is right now, 4:23 in the morning. There's nobody in their office.
You're such a smart ass. You got an answer for everything, don't you?
No, it's because I've called these places, and I have checked out all my resources here in Santa Cruz County, which suck.
All right, well, let's not give up. There's a couple more numbers here. You can call Adult or Child Protective Services. Now, they got Adult Protective, they got Child Protective. That covers the whole gamut, right?
No, it does not. Adult and Child Services is for children that are being abused.
Well, aren't you being abused by the police tonight?
Yes, we are.
Well, how about giving them a call?
I don't think anybody would probably even be in their office either.
Yeah, that's true. They're probably sleeping.
Being in their nice, warm houses and not being harassed by Santa Cruz PD.
Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? Let's see what else we got. We have, hey, now, here we go, Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous. You probably want to remain anonymous, so why not give them a call?
Because I'm not an alcoholic and I don't do drugs.
You know, you're making this rather difficult for me. I've gone through the entire homeless resource card from the city of Santa Cruz, given out by the Santa Cruz Police Department, and you seem to be taking a very negative view.
Because the Santa Cruz Police Department and their resource paper is a piece of shit. Okay, they give you all of these resources supposedly And supposedly they will help you. They will not, because it is summertime, guys, not winter. During the winter, maybe. But during the summer, they will not. They only take.
Don't birds go south for the summer?
No, that's for the winter.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a little bit confused here. All right, well, anything you want to add to your analysis of the excellent services that the police department has offered you, instead of lying out here in the cold in the middle of the night and provoking the hostility of the community of Santa Cruz, you could be doing something, you know, for yourself. Instead, you're listening to ridiculous activists and lying around next to City Hall. Now, what's your response?
The reason why I'm laying around City Hall, and I will keep coming back, is because this law is stupid. They're violating constitutional rights. They're violating health code rights. And if you do not sleep, and everybody has a right to sleep, you can also die.
That's what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says, and that's what the California Supreme Court says in the ICORN decision, but apparently that
isn't
the law in Santa Cruz. Like, Santa Cruz has a law unto itself.
Yeah, you know, I see that. I see that Santa Cruz is indeed trying to be groundbreaking and creating new things and creating new ideas and trying to propagate better things for our people. But when it comes down to violating human rights, when it comes down to violating civil liberties, when it comes down to violating a person's right to peace of mind and sleep and happiness, you know, where do they get off? Who gave them the right to do this? Who gave them the ability to do this other than the fat cat rich clowns sitting up in their houses, sitting up in there making the laws, making the decisions for us, and taking the rights of our people, our working class and our lower income classes, taking our rights away from us because they have more money? That's bullshit. They don't need to be doing that anymore.
Thank you, John.
You're listening to Conversation After the Police Came and Gave a Warning and Before They Came and Gave Tickets on Saturday morning, August 19th. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This happened at City Hall toward a group of protesters, originally 25 or 30 strong, most of whom left, some of whom stayed to challenge the police action by taking the tickets. And I wanted to interrupt this because there is currently, if you hustle down to the Vets Hall, I should have announced this earlier, for the last hour and for another 20 minutes, there's going to be a chance, perhaps, to talk to U.S. Representative Sam Farr. This is the guy who recently voted in favor of the biggest military appropriation in U.S. history. I requested of his staff earlier this week that he get back to me, or his staff get back to me, with a brief description of why he wanted to do this when it would empower the military further to murder more people in Iraq, continue the the terrorist intervention in Afghanistan. And indeed, if you want who the terrorists are, I think you need do nothing more than turn your face toward Washington. And Representative Farr's office had no response as to why he voted for this military appropriation. But perhaps if you get to this Veterans Hall affair, which is down on Front Street near the town clock, right next to the post office, you'll be able to get an answer from our very own Representative Sammy Farr. A little more now from the 4:30 a.m. or thereabouts at the City Hall as protesters shivered in the dark, defending basic rights that all of us should be able to use, but most of us either don't care about, don't know about, or don't want to hear about, or are afraid to try to exercise.
So I'm walking about the City Hall, where last night, and it's about 3:40, there were 20, 25 people kind of neatly arrayed here in the area that is right outside the city council chambers. Here now there are only two lone individuals separated by the courtyard in sleeping bags. And Matt here is getting his sleeping bag ready. How's it going, Matt?
Good. Just going to go back to bed.
Okay. Well, enjoy your sleep.
Yeah.
And it looks like a total of four people over here on this side. So I count six people who are still in their bags. And Shane is still in front of the city hall with his camper van. And some of the most active activists are packing up, planning to meet tomorrow at the town pastor Dennis Adams' pastor's hand, Potter's hand, at the meal at the town clock. So, John, you say that you saw the police. It wasn't all bad times for the police as they came doing their walkthrough, waking people up. They said some of them had some pleasant smiles on their face. So.
Yeah, I saw a couple of officers who were pretty bummed out about having to do what they were doing because they realized, you know, these are just human beings trying to sleep. But for the most part, the police officers were having a camaraderie thing. They were really enjoying what they had to do, and they were talking about, well, I can't wait till I can pack this stuff up in the truck and things like that. They're talking about taking our belongings, taking our camping gear, taking our sleeping bags and our clothing, and throwing it away. So they actually enjoyed the idea of doing it, which to me is just the cruel streak that it does take to be a police officer.
Yeah, it'd be good for everybody to be aware of their possessions, even mark them, and if the police do confiscate them, insist that they be given a receipt, and that if it's going to be destroyed, that the officer in charge clarify under what ordinance they're doing that, because it's not abandoned property. If they're making it pursuant to an arrest, it has to be held as evidence. It's your property, so that's something that when we talk again, and we probably should. It sort of lets us know in the future we need to do more workshops on this so people can know
I'm thinking,
more what their options are.
I'm thinking that before we try to even escalate our protests to another level, which is what they're asking us to do, is escalate it another number. Before we start trying to escalate it, I think that there should be a few more workshops out there, a few more people better informed of their rights and the responsibilities in a protest situation. We have responsibilities, you know, as far as keeping camps clean, making sure our message gets out there in a positive light and not in a negative light of yelling and rabble-rousing. And I think that a lot of the protesters were out here really uninformed. They didn't know exactly what they were doing. You know, they just knew that they were protesting what they knew to be a wrong in their lives. And I'd like to tomorrow at our meeting at the clock tower, I'd like to get people together and start informing them, getting them more learned about what they're doing in a protest situation, because a lot of people really didn't know. And, you know, get people taught, get people the information they need, so that the next time the police try to break up a protest that they're involved in, especially on this important issue, you know, they have the information to work with. They can say, you know what, police officer, I know you're breaking the law. I know you're violating my civil rights. I know what's going on here. Do you have a place for me to go?
Now we're turning over the tape to continue this saga. You're listening to John, who was one of the main organizers of the protest. He and his wife, Amanda, were instrumental in doing it, and I believe they're still in town. I also wanted to note that I'm hoping to get Damone, who gave that long, somewhat hoarse description and deconstruction of the bogus homeless resources card that the police gave out at the same time as they were denying people the right to sleep legally in a safe group at City Hall and dispersing them into nowhere, into the bushes, claiming that there were places for them to go, but of course there weren't. Kind of a double deception. Damone wanted me to announce that there's a meeting tomorrow at Elm Street at noon at the meal for activists who want to get together on Monday and meet the mayor, who I believe that's happening at 9:30 at City Hall in the morning. Mayor Riley would not meet with the activists when they were there, but scheduled a meeting a week and a half later. So that's an opportunity, as I understand it, but I'm going to try to get Damone on the phone to get an exact confirmation of that.
Clock here on August 18th, Saturday morning, in front of City Hall, and I'm talking with
today?
Lee, not a consumer.
Non-consumer Lee, who's for the first night. This is your first night here at City Hall. You for a while.
Yeah, normally I sleep up in the woods, but since I work in town, I figured I'd come down, spend the night on a nice soft lawn, which I couldn't because they turned the sprinklers on early in the morning.
Did they do that this morning?
I don't know. They didn't come on this morning. I was thinking, God, if they come on every day, it's like that's really wasting water on our tax dollars.
Times a week, maybe.
Yeah, well, didn't want to find out. Uh-huh.
And you say the police, the number of police that got together, you suspect it was sort of a leftover from the...
Cleaning up the bars after they shut down. They had them all together in one place. So the supervisor just says, since I've got you all together in this one place, well, we've got these people sleeping on City Hall steps, but it was about the most half-hearted effort I've ever seen. And they didn't even kick me in the foot to wake me up. It's just like, hey, can we talk to you? You know?
And, no, I'm going to sleep. Come back tomorrow.
Well, I did. I said, come on, man. I have to be up for work in the morning. And he said, no, I really have to talk to you. I said, okay, you know you're violating that your whole operation is extra legal here because you're violating the state charter by not building housing for people that actually work here. And it's not just the homeless, it's everybody you're after. Desperately gentrifying Santa Cruz, as it were.
And particularly violating the Ninth Circuit Court of Opinion's Jones decision in Los Angeles.
Oh, absolutely. And these guys have to know this. Like I told one of them, you watch the laws. I know you know what you're doing. Just got, you know, all torn
and
up.
And they're liable for what they do.
Well, not as individuals, and nor do I hold them personally accountable. Like I said, since I've got you all here, and... they're under orders, man. What the fuck are they going to do? And they all milled around here, and they didn't even really roust anybody. So it's like, can I talk to you?
No, I don't think the Nuremberg defense applies. If they're advised that they know they're
Nuremberg.
Making, yeah, I'm under orders. You know,
these,
I mean,
no,
a false,
these guys
false arrests are false arrests. You know.
I can't make the call whether they should be standing down illegal orders. That's very much on them. As it was, yeah, they're part of a machine. I don't want to go there because it's all part of the machine, so to speak. And it's
want the machine to stop.
I mean, no matter what you do, you know, just because we're here, we're sort of part of the machine. So I can't.
I'll be back tomorrow night. Don't worry.
I want my ticket. Come on, officer.
They'll write you a ticket. Sign the papers. But the thing is that they're stuck in the middle of a serious political crunch here. This would not be at the top of the Measure K prioritization thing either. I've told you this before, Robert. I mean, I'm from Brooklyn, and I've lived in other big cities. These guys are not corrupt like that. If they were left alone without the influence of the Downtown Business Association, Santa Cruz Sentinel, and all that, left to their own devices, they could probably do a reasonably good job of not hassling campers and finding real crime and things like that.
And we do have a caller. I think it is Damone calling in. Go ahead, Damone.
Yes. I am calling to let the homies know for the homeless that Saturday, please meet at Elm Street because at 10 o'clock on the 27th, we go in to see the mayor. And so we need to get together and have a meeting. And then after the meeting on Monday, have everybody meet at City Hall, please, at 9:30 on the lawn.
Okay, and so the first meeting is going to be Saturday?
Saturday at Elm Street, yes.
At what time?
They feed lunch at noon, so I'm thinking probably right after noon. About 1 o'clock, right there in the parking lot right across from Elm Street.
In the infamous parking lot number 9, where it is illegal to be without a bicycle or car. Good luck, you guys.
And then at City Hall on Monday, the 27th, I stress on that because the more people that we have to go in to talk to the mayor, the better it's going to look for us guys, to get the sleeping van lifted. So please show.
Now, do you want people who are not homeless to come to this as well?
Yes. Anybody in Santa Cruz County can come to this, would like to come.
Okay. Anything happening recently, Damone, that you want to let the audience know about?
Yes. A few of our vet brothers have been harassed by the police. Wednesday, I was harassed by the police for camping out in Santa Cruz. They drove by, stared at me, started to get out of the car to give me a camping ticket and got another call and drove off. But they are still giving camping tickets. And Ranger Wallace out in the Poconos, come to find out from a few of my brothers and sisters that are also homeless, he is still destroying their tent. We need to put a stop to this, guys. So please show up.
Sounds good. Are you getting much response from the homeless about your protests at City Hall?
Yes, I am. I have talked to a bunch of the brothers and sisters that were at the Homeless for the Homies when we were doing the protest. I have talked also to pastors. I've talked to Marcus at the shelter. I've talked to Mama Betty, who is Betty Scott, who works at the shower bay at Coral Street Shelter. I've talked to Shannon and Dave, and we have them even backing us up trying to get the sleeping bag lifted, guys. And I've also talked to everybody at HPHP, which is the medical staff at Coral Street Shelter also, and they're backing us even. So the more the merrier.
Wow. Well, it sounds good to me. Do you want to give out a number where people can reach you, or do you want people messages through the Huff line?
Only... send messages to the Huff line to Robert North, please. And then Robert can call me if there's like an emergency and somebody needs help. That will work.
Okay.
So please call and inform us, guys, what's going on with you guys, please, because we all need a safe place to sleep, guys. And girls, everybody in the community should have a right to sleep, whether you're homeless, in a house, at the shelter, wherever you're at, even if it's in your car with your pets, your family, without getting harassed, guys. So please show up.
Well put, Damone. Okie doke. If you want to get in touch with Damone, give me a call at 423-4833. That is a message line. There may be a delay, but I will pass on the message to her. And again, I guess the times you were saying, Damone, were Saturday around 1 o'clock at the Elm Street Mission, which is right across, which is between...
Yeah, because they still feed lunch from noon till 1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking even if they want to show up over there between noon and 1, we can also have the meeting then, whatever is convenient for them, because I will be there no matter what on Saturday.
Right, that's a parking lot right between Cedar and Pacific on Elm Street. And you also suggest coming down to City Hall, which is 809 Center Street across from the main library, I guess at 9:30 in the morning when you have your meeting at 10.
Yes. The more the merrier, because if we fill the mayor's yard and her chamber, she's going to have to listen to us, guys. And hopefully we can get this law, the stupid law that's been on the books for 30 years, that it is illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz County.
And so, it's actually true. It is. There are other laws in the county that have that, but the city law is a particularly bad one as far as I'm concerned. It's 11 o'clock to 8:30. It's completely illegal to sleep on any public property, and there's no safe or legal place to sleep for the 1,500 to 2,000 people out there, of which you are one, apparently, Damone.
Yes.
But what about tonight? Where are you sleeping?
I am sleeping tonight, and there's only 40 beds. I am with the women's group tonight at the church at Scotts Valley, which they don't have enough beds for everybody, and the shelter... River Street Shelter right now does not even have crisis beds for mental health patients because they are so overly whelmed and booked.
Now, did you get this because you just walked in and asked for it, or was there some crisis that produced it?
It was because I was assaulted by my husband yesterday afternoon. And Officer Eric Hoppe and a bunch of the officers came down yesterday and asked me to go to HPHP, which is the Homeless Medical Center, to talk to my counselor, who is Jean Graham. And Jean's like, no, I'm not allowing you to be back out there. We went to River Street trying to get me a crisis bed. They were all full. And Jean's like, go get on women's group for the next couple of days so we know at least that you're safe.
So,
I took the police taking me down there. And the police car to make sure I actually got a bed.
Well, maybe that's the answer to this whole problem, Damone. We can have somebody going out and assaulting homeless people one after another, sure. And then each of them can request these emergency services. Of course, I'm being facetious, but nonetheless.
And if you are a family in Santa Cruz and are trying to get in with small children to the family shelter, good luck. There's a 3-year waiting list, people.
Okay, Damone. Well, I appreciate your calling in. That about wraps it up for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Maybe you can call back on Sunday when I'll be coming back at 9:30 in the morning with more reports and more updates. Maybe Mayor Riley will have called you and said that she's very sympathetic, wants to have an emergency law, an emergency session of the City Council so people will be allowed to sleep legally somewhere. Or maybe she'll just be instructing the police force to do what the LAPD and the San Diego PD now do, which is not arrest or cite homeless people at night because of the Ninth Circuit Court opinion that says you can't do that. It's a violation of the Constitution.
Of our constitutional rights, and it's also a violation of medical rights. People are dying from lack of sleep.
You got it.
So,
hey.
Please show up and help for the cause, guys. Love you all, you guys. See you guys hopefully Saturday.
All right. Thank you, Damone. Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Let's hear a little No Shelter by Rage Against the Machine. And then I think Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs is going to be loping into the studio to give us his brand of, a little sleepy time music, which might put a few people to sleep. And who knows, maybe it'll wake a few other people up. We'll be right back.
and shove it into my arm. Wherever I feel life is coming on too strong. They left me in the clinic full of cynical and motherfucking bureaucrats. And the other kind of dingbats are living on the tracks, but the tracks in my arm. Said it all depends on which side the tracks you're on. So telling me what to wear and telling me cut my hair and trying to convince me that they really, really care about my health and about my wealth. But till they built the stealth, cause everybody's just looking out for that. So then I ask him, can I have a clean needle? He say, hell no, that's illegal, it's a crime. Yeah. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. To be black in America, come on, y'all. In the poorhouse who can't afford more house. Politicians nervous, it's the only free service they provide. You wanna go inside, there's a hot meal waiting for you. A deal we can score you on a bed for a night or two or three or 4 months. They say they locking us up in a cell to protect us from ourselves. It smell like they got another plan in storehouse. Or should I say, warehouse full of niggas and other misfits that couldn't turn tricks in the courthouse. Nah, it's a justice whorehouse, and it's a crime. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. Yeah, to be broke in America, come on, y'all. Take a sample, there's no need to play it backwards if you wanna hear the devil. Cause music's not the problem, it didn't cause a bombing. But maybe they say listen to the songs of my people starving. Ooh yeah, cause it's a crime, yeah. It's a crime, crime, crime. To be broke in America.
it's a crime to be different. Say it's a crime to be a woman. Say it's a crime to have AIDS. And it's a crime to be broke. And it's a crime to smoke weed. You know what I'm talking about?
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. FreakRadio.org is where we stream the signal out of, if you're listening online, or maybe you'd like to, as you get further and further out of our natural broadcast range. Wander on over to FreakRadio.org and listen to our nice 128K stereo stream, where all this comes up real nice and pretty. Hey, it's Thursday night. It's a little bit after 8 o'clock. It must be time for From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm your special secret guest host. My name's Matt. I'll be with you here for the next few hours. Going to be bringing you music from the 60s and mostly the 70s tonight, with an emphasis on all kinds of crazy progressive rock and big sets of Rush and Frank Zappa and maybe some more obscure things as well. And hopefully we're going to make it so we get the tracks that come out of the stereo, out of the computer, to be in stereo. We'll see about that. We will see about that. This is disconcerting. Well, I don't know. Maybe we should just find something else. Let's pod this down here for a sec. Actually, I'll let it go for a sec, and let's just go into a different track that hopefully will be in both left and right, which I think is a more enjoyable listening experience. You may concur or not. Everybody gets to make up their own mind. If you are out there and you're going to be listening intently, if you've got them handy, put on a nice pair of headphones. You know, back in the 70s, they realized how to make some really good stereo sound, and there's no reason to listen to it on two speakers that are kind of vaguely over there, not very well separated. Why did we take all the time to record it in stereo and you know, all that extra time and effects, and then you listen to it? No. Set it up. Either set your stereo speakers up nice or put the headphones on. Music is for listening to, enjoying. Let's see if we can make this a little more enjoyable. Let's play with this for a second, see what we get. That's very done. All right. Here we go. Let's see if